Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Taos of Baltimore. We call this Baltimore Positive. Hoping you're setting a dial out on AM 1570 if you follow us out on the internet. We're doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. I have the Back to the Future scratch-offs. We will have these. We'll have them this week at Cooper's North on Wednesday. On the 30th, we'll be back at Coco's Pub in Lauraville. Looking forward to that one. And then on May the 7th, we will be at Red Brick Station in White Marsh, doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. This guy's had a crab cake, been out with us on occasion. As long as it does not involve cheese, he will be involved. He is our longtime Orioles, I would say insider, outsider, farsider, but he has been through all the paths back to Jeffrey Mayer with me as one of our first Orioles insiders. Alan McCallum now joins us in the midst of the chaos of bad starting pitching, this little mini trip down to DC and then off to Detroit into the weekend. And this has really become a mess since the last time you and I got together. And you were as concerned as all of my baseball people. All of you were a lot more optimistic. I was trying to get my press pass back, be nice. But all of you liked the pitching even less than I did, and I wasn't enamored with it. This is a code red for the franchise right now with the new owner. At least hopefully you got a bobblehead over the weekend. Did you get a bobblehead, Alan?
I did not. I've never really collected bobbleheads. It's not really my thing. I have a couple because people give me stuff, but
I've seen your Star Wars collection. Don't talk to me about things.
I didn't say I didn't collect anything. I said I don't collect
Okay, that's
bobbleheads.
fine.
I'm sure at some point one will fall into my hands at some point, but it's not something I'm going to rush out to get.
What do you
I
make of the
spent
whole
time at
thing?
David Rubenstein at the Kennedy Center, so it's
Well,
not.
yeah. Well, what do you make of the whole thing? Yeah, just of where it is with new ownership, money, the money that's being spent, where the leadership is. And more than that, I keep going back to, it's not like Elias didn't have a plan. There were a bunch of pitchers around here till all their arms fell off.
Yeah, so look, I've been looking and reading online and fans talking for years about how Mike Elias and Brandon Hyde are bad and horrible. And I, have they won the World Series yet? No, but they won 192 games in the last 2 years. Won quite a few the year before that. So I mean, let's get not get nuts about what's happened. But to be frank, Mike Elias had an advantage on the division 2 years ago, and he's let that slip away. Now, is the question that he hasn't had money to spend, or has he just not spent it? It feels like he is intent on building this team so completely from within, and I don't know whether that is possible. I don't think it's possible in this game. I will say this. They rebuilt this organization drafting young hitters. Now, we've talked about this for decades, it seems like. I am firmly of the belief that it is easier to rebuild an organization based on bats than it is on pitching. Cleveland, Tampa, Seattle, maybe you throw in San Diego. In Atlanta at this point, these are organizations that seem to be able to draft and develop good starting pitching. But I don't know that there's anything harder in sports than to develop the majority of a pitching staff from within. If you have a stable of good young hitters, you can then go out and trade for and buy a pitching staff. And frankly, the money that you spend big money on pitchers, and it's still a risk, but you have more of an edge, in my opinion, if you have bats. So they've done that. The problem is, you then have to be willing to trade some of them or spend money on some of them to get what you need. And what seems to have fallen short, from my opinion, and Elias, is that he hasn't been willing to do that. The two things that I would have done in this offseason, right off the bat, I would have traded for Garrett Crochet, and I would have signed Walker Buehler. Now, the Buehler thing, you can debate whether or not that's going to pull it out or not, but they
So
certainly have
basically,
the
what you think what the Red Sox did is exactly what they should have done.
it's what I would have done. And then beyond that, you have a guy like Jose Quintana, who was still out there. I mean, there were plenty of guys out there that you didn't have to spend top dollar on who could have increased your depth. I get that if you're Michael Elias, you're looking and saying, hey, we've got Kyle Bradish and Tyler Wells, and we want to see about Cade Povich, and we don't want to block these guys. But I think at this point, with modern analytics and the way pitchers are used, I mean, when it's a greatest outing ever, when a pitcher goes six innings and gives up three or four runs, you need depth in your organization. And not only did they not have depth, the pitchers they're counting on were frankly farther away in the second half of the season, if they're lucky. Not to mention that so far in Grayson Rodriguez's tenure, we've seen that he is injury prone. And God only knows who he's going to pitch at all this year at this point. I mean, as a manager in anything, I think that you play the game expecting the worst and hoping for the best. And Elias came into the season, in my opinion, looking for the best outcome for his pitching staff, that Grayson Rodriguez was going to be healthy, and Tyler Wells and Kyle Bradish were going to be back early, and Charlie Morton would pitch like a 35-year-old at 41, and that Cade Povich, his September would turn into his reality for 2025. Maybe that'll still happen.
Well, you need a
I
lot of
think
things to go right in order to win, no matter when you win, right? I mean,
absolutely,
I
but
mean, 2 years ago, everything went right for them to be a 101-win team, and then it went wrong in October. But from a pitching standpoint, they were upright, and even dealing for Corbin Burns, and even trying to get Bradish back on the hill in May of last year, I thought that was one of the best teams, and you and I did a segment at that point that
sure.
they had ever put together in my 50 years of following the Orioles. I thought they're on to something. And now 11 months later, they are embattled at this point. And part of that is Moneybags, your guy Rubenstein comes in. They've spent a lot of his money. How have they spent it? I've had people that are neophyte that say, well, Angelos never spent money. Is this guy spending money? Will he spend money? He didn't sign Soto. He didn't sign Corbin Burns. And I'm thinking to myself, well, they've almost doubled their payroll in a year, and what did they get for it? What are they getting for the money they're spending?
So let's look at, I mean, some things have gone right. I mean, everyone was wringing their hands about the bullpen. Bullpen's been pretty good. I mean, shy of C&L Perez, Sir Anthony Dominguez couldn't get anybody out in March, and he's
Dude, I
looked
would
pretty
just
good.
say the bullpen, to me, that's a matter of time. I don't think the bullpen has any more depth than the starting rotation had. I just think it's showing a little better the first couple weeks. I think.
The truth about any bullpen is that if you overwork them in April and May, they will fall apart in June and July. I mean, that's inevitable because the starting pitching is giving them no length. But in terms of hoping for the best, that's been better than we were than we I know I feared in March. So, I mean, that's a positive.
I
But
would be
then.
stunned if the bullpen is the strength of their team through the course of the season. That would stun me, Alan. The strength of their team has to be hitting the hell out of the ball, and that hasn't been a strength.
So let's talk about offense. I mean, the thing about the offense what we're looking for is consistency. And I don't know that. Look, Anthony Santander, you can make arguments both pro and con for keeping him. He was the only he's heading into his 30s. He's not a guy that looks like he's going to get better as he gets older in terms of hitting and plate discipline, et cetera. But what he was, and people will say he's a below average defensive player, but I would tell you, I thought he did fairly well defensively. And the other thing is that whatever he wasn't, he was a presence in the middle of that lineup that helped anchor everybody else. People talk about WAR all the time, and I think WAR is a joke, and here's why. You look at a guy like Ben Rice in the Yankees lineup, and he's tearing the cover off the ball. Well, he's hitting in front of Aaron Judge. And if you are a young player with some skills and the opponent is trying to do something, they're going to pitch to you because they don't want to pitch to Judge, right? So young guys, man, same thing happened with Manny Machado, who's obviously a star, but This whole idea in new analytics about putting your slugger in the number two spot never made any sense to me. It weakens the bottom of the it weakens every spot below that, and it doesn't give anyone in front of that player an opportunity to succeed in their greatness, if that makes any sense. The thing about war, it seems to me, is that it's based on the idea that every player is an individual unto themselves, and in a good lineup, good players make other players better. So war is never st a statistic, in my opinion, that can exist within one individual. It's about how the lineup gets made. Scott Brosius, when he was a Yankee, was a much better player than he was with the Oakland A's, and it was clear because he was in a lineup that he could hit in the bottom of the order, and after making it through the gauntlet, he was a guy suddenly that could hit the ball out of the ballpark. There are things about the way a lineup is constructed that matters. So now Anthony Santander is gone. They want to put Gunnar Henderson, who would be that aircraft carrier, at the top of the lineup. And it forces other players who shouldn't be in the middle of the lineup there. Maybe Jordan Westberg is a guy that's going to end up being a good number three, number four, number five hitter, but he's a young guy that's still learning. And to move him from five, six, seven, where he was succeeding, into the middle of the lineup changes his responsibilities and his role. You gave Tyler O'Neill 3 years and a decent amount of money, but they're not batting him in the middle of the lineup because he's a good complementary player, but he may not be that guy. They're putting Ryan O'Hearn, who's a good solid player, he's off to a good start, but is he really a three, four, five hitter? I don't know. It seemed to me that what the best outcome for this team, if you were in fact going to continue to have Gunnar Henderson in the number one, number two spot, was to have Heston Kjerstad and Kobe Mayo show up as the players that they are being touted to be. Guys who can fill in the middle of the lineup, guys that can slug, but you have to prove that. Heston Kjerstad was just starting to get into a groove when he got hit. Kobe Mayo's not here yet and doesn't have a position. Is Ryan Mountcastle the 35 home run guy from his rookie season, or is he a guy that gets hot two or three times a year and plays well, but is otherwise a mediocre player? So far, the latter seems to be the truth.
Well, Mullins, you haven't mentioned Mullins, and he's been their best player.
Absolutely. Adley Rutschman is supposed to be one of the elite players. And again, other than opening day, he's off to a questionable start. So there are a lot of. There's no presence in the middle of the lineup right now that will calm down the rest of the lineup. Even Gunnar, who's starting to get hot, was out for the first 2.5 weeks. So I mean, there are lots of things that you can look at and say, this team needs signing Juan Soto was never going to be something the Orioles should have or would have done. I would have to spend what money they have on a player like that, who is a good hitter, but doesn't help you defensively, doesn't help you on the bases. All he does is hit, and that's not how I think he's dramatically overpriced based on that. But they had plenty of options they could have gone through from the pitching staff. Mike Elias during the offseason at the general manager's meeting said, "We're in on everybody," when he was asked about Max Fried and Corbin Burns. Well, what they got was Charlie Morton and Sagano. If you're gonna play on that end, the Roland Heeman, Dan Duquette end, where you pick up the scraps at the back end, don't set people's expectations to the point where you say we're in on everybody. There were other players they could have gotten, other pitchers that would have helped to augment the staff, and they went from the back end. And when you're playing in the American League East, where the Red Sox had been bad, and they went out and made changes to improve, spent some money, didn't spend big money, but spent money. And the Yankees lose Juan Soto and immediately go out and get Max Fried and Paul Goldschmidt and Cody Bellinger to add to the depth of their lineup. And all those, I mean, Goldschmidt's off to a good start. Cody Bellinger's been subpar. Max Fried almost threw a no-hitter yesterday. I mean, if you go out and augment where you need the help. They didn't have to cut off their line to their young players. They didn't have to spend Juan Soto money, but there were things they could have done to help augment this team. Is it over? No. all these guys can get hot. We know that Jordan Westbrook's not going to hit 190 through the rest of the year. He's going to find himself. I assume Adley Rutschman. I would give Adley Rutschman the benefit of the doubt and believe he's going to find his way back to a 275, 320, 20 home run season and be productive, but maybe not be number two or number three hitter in the lineup. Maybe that's not what he is at this point in his career. I would like to believe that Heston Kjerstad's going to get back in the lineup. We started to see him get hot. I think maybe he can be that guy, but that means confidence and reps. I think ultimately Kobe Mayo is going to have to replace Ryan Mountcastle. And then the question is he the guy he's been touted as? And then ultimately, I think Sam Bisaio is probably going to have to make his way up here and be what they think he is. And that doesn't even include Jackson Holiday. And then defensively, I have questions. I mean, even bringing the wall back in left field at Camden Yards has always been and continues to be one of the toughest left fields in baseball. Even when it's not deep from gap to line, it's as far as anything. Why are they playing Tyler O'Neill if they want us to believe that he is a gold glove caliber defensive outfielder? Shouldn't he be in left field and Heston Kjerstad being in right field? Now, maybe I don't know what the conversations are. Maybe O'Neill has said he's more comfortable in right field, but for the benefit of this team, I don't think it makes sense to put your an average outfielder. You have always needed from the day it opened a second center fielder in left field, which is why Brady Anderson was the best left fielder in baseball when he played out there. Which is why Austin Hayes, who was a second center fielder, played so well in left field. There are things to understand about how this team needs to be set up. And I think that there have been some weaknesses and some lack of attention to depth, and the reality that you have to go beyond your organization to put a team together to win, particularly when you are going day to day up against the Yankees and the Red Sox, and the Blue Jays, who are trying to play in that big field and aren't necessarily those kinds of big spenders. They don't necessarily get those people. The Canadian border is an impact on money and travel and all that, but they're certainly not afraid to go out and try and offer people money. So the Orioles, to be an insular team like the Rays, I guess it can be done, but it is if you what the
Well, it's going to
Rays
take
have
the
is
full blossoming of the young players. I mean, you mentioned
absolutely.
Rutschman and these guys. Those guys have to be really, really good. And Kowser needs to be on the field. Holiday needs to blossom. They need these players to be superstar players, not just a guy, which is what Holiday is right now. Henderson's the only guy that I'm looking at saying he's more than a guy. Westberg, jury's still out. Kowser's not around.
They
But the
don't need
pitching, the
all of
pitching,
them.
the pitching. Allen, like they can't pitch their way out of this. And that's like you're like, is it over? It's not over. No, it's not over, but it's over in believing that this pitching can even be league average. It's not going to be league average.
Not the way it's constituted right now. They certainly look, they need it, if it's Brandon Young, the kid who pitched on Saturday. Who, once he settled down, seemed to look good. They've got a couple of young guys in the minor leagues, but again, it's about always proving yourself. They need some guy. They need Zach Eflin to come back and be healthy. They need to go and trade for someone. I've heard Sandy Alcantara's name a lot, but he's not lighting the world on fire right now. They need to go find someone, whether it's one of the Seattle pitchers or someone who's pitching in Miami to be a solid number two. They need Kyle Bradish to come back and be healthy and not have lost a step from where he was, which is a lot to ask for a guy who hasn't pitched in a year in it, but for essentially a year and a half. I know he had a couple starts last year. They need Dean Kramer to step up because he's a guy who can eat innings and probably pitch to a 4 ERA. At least he's shown himself to be that. Whether he continues to be remains to be seen. They have
They
some
might not
things.
have
They have.
anybody that could pitch sub 4 ERA, right? Like we're really
I think
asking a
Eflin
lot.
can pitch to a sub four. 3.5. I think Eflin's could be a 3.5 guy if he's healthy. But they need more than that. I don't know that I would have given Corbin Burns the money they offered him and the money he signed for, because if you looked at his numbers, they have declined over the years, and he's not off to a great start right now. But you could have taken that money and spread it out, much like the Yankees did, to get some pieces that would have really helped this club. So that look, they Jordan Westberg, Jackson Holliday, Adley Rutschman, all of them don't need to be megastars. They need Gunnar to be a megastar. They need either Kerstad or Mayo to be a megastar. I'd say Kerstad right now since he's here. They need Jackson Holliday to figure it out. I mean, Westberg, if that were to happen, then Westberg and Holliday could be guys, solid guys. You don't need nine superstars, but you need a lineup that's going to function, particularly without anyone in the middle of the lineup that really scares you right now. They need these guys it's time for them to step up. Westberg, this is his second full year, even having missed a couple months last season. Rutschman has been established in the league. I mean, it's time for these guys to take a step forward. But it would have been a lot easier if they had a presence in the middle of the lineup that would have taken some of the pressure off the rest of these guys. And they don't have it. So it's they need to figure it out, and they need to figure it out now.
Alan McCallum is here. He is our longtime baseball analyst. We are just sort of rounding the bend here, and I wasn't going to bother you in April here. And then this is how alarmed are you? I mean, on behalf of the season, look, there have been a lot of lost seasons here where there was years and years where there was nothing for you and I to talk about. After two playoff runs, you'd think, well, you can regress or whatever. This was not supposed to be the year of regression, though, really.
No. How concerned am I? I don't think the Yankees are going to hit at the clip they've been hitting at for the rest of the season. I think they're an old team, and I think there's some injuries coming. Okay. The Red Sox are, no one has run away from them in the division yet. I mean, but you can't count on that into June. I mean, at some point you have to get hot. Now, it's not uncommon in baseball for the calendar to flip and teams get going. I think as we hit May and it's consistently warm weather, and it's not cold in this place, hot in this, warm in this place, I think the bats will heat up a little bit. I think that's true. I think they need to find. Look, here's a reality. Mike Elias is going with a lot of left-handed bats in this lineup, and I mean, we sat together at one of the restaurants last season, and I said, the formula for beating the Orioles is throw a left-handed pitcher at them. I mean, that's not a surprise. And they have this right-handed lineup, really hasn't worked yet. So the reality is, you've got these guys who you think are stars. Either left-handed hitters can hit left-handed pitching, or they can't. So I think you need to play some of them. Excuse me, against. Excuse me, left-handed pitching. And see what they can do. I think they need to find some more consistency in the lineup. And that's going to be tough because at this point, this team is built very analytically for guys to move in and out. And I think that's tough on a lot of players. Ramon Urias, there were people in this town screaming, get rid of Ramon Urias for basically a year and a half when he didn't play. And then suddenly when he plays, he was the most productive hitter for the team in the second half of the season last year. And it's continued into this season being a productive player, but you got to play. Is the team better off if the guys in front of him are hitting and he doesn't play? Probably, but that's not the way the situation is right now. But I think they need to find a consistent lineup. I think they need to make some decisions about what they think certain players are. I certainly think they need to
I
get
think
some
it's
of the
too
home.
early on to do that for some players. I mean, Mountcastle and O'Hearn, I'll hear that, but like a lot of these young guys, I don't even know who they are, right? I mean, they've moved positions on guys. Holliday's really a shortstop. They made him a second base. Everybody's playing a little weird out of position because Henderson really emerged as a shortstop and not a third baseman because they had a log jam at all of that. They have Westbrook playing at second, and they haven't played at third. I mean, some of these guys are pretty deft defensively, but to your point, decide what you are and go with it instead of tinkering around. And the injuries have really forced a lot of that. I mean, the Kauser injury on top of everything else has forced them into lineups they don't want.
Well, I'll be honest. I kind of think the Colton Cowser injury might have been the best thing that happened to the team early because it forced them to play Heston Kerstad. And I don't know that Brandon Hyde would have played Kerstad that much, and he couldn't sit on the bench. As I said, I believe that Heston Colton Cowser strikes out just way too much. Period. I mean, they were going to hit him either
You
the
are
top
not
tier.
wearing the moose suit, are you? Okay.
I'm not saying he can't be a productive player. He's a pretty good outfielder. Can hit 25 home runs. I'm not telling, but he's a guy that should be hitting seventh or eighth in my lineup. Certainly not first, certainly not fourth, until he proves me wrong. But the few at bats that I saw at the beginning of the year didn't look much better than I expected him to progress. And early on, I wasn't impressed with what I saw. Maybe he'll come back and be different. But having him out of the lineup forced them to play Heston Kerstad. And I think Heston Kerstad has a much better shot of being the player that they need in the middle of the lineup than Colton Cowser. But I mean, I'll say this, you know, you're for all the talk about whether Anthony Santander was a good outfielder or not, I'm watching Ryan O'Hearn run around in right field because they've got to play him. They're trying to play him out there because he's not a great first baseman. You know, is he good enough hitter, powerful enough hitter to be a DH?
Well,
And he's
they're
not a
playing
great
that
first
game with
baseman.
Mateo in the outfield too. Be careful what you're doing when you just put in Strat-O-Matic fours out on the field, right? I
Right.
mean, because
Well,
the ball finds those guys. It does.
if you're going to play Mateo in center field, probably not do it in Kansas City, which is one of the biggest center fields in the game, against a team that hits line drives all day. I mean, it's important to pick your spots, right? And when you put him out in that situation, he's got nowhere to hide. So I mean, those were questionable decisions. I can't argue that. I don't think Brandon Hyde deserved to be fired, and I don't think he's as bad a manager as I hear people make out when they won 192 games the last 2 years. But there are certainly reasons to question him at times, and putting Mateo in Kansas City in that situation was certainly one of them. Look, this team has a lot of work to do. Period. They've got a lot of work to do. And they have injuries to overcome, but you know what? So does everybody else. They're not out of it yet, but it could get late early. And it's time for guys to wake up. The debacle that happened on Easter Sunday was embarrassing and tough and hadn't happened to this team like that in a while. I've seen games like that before. We all have. But it
Well,
had
I
been a
still
minute.
got Texas 30, Orioles 3. I still see that one.
No question. I mean, I remember Manny Alexander pitching, I think in a 26 to something game, a couple of years before that one. So, you know, there are things to. This is a good to off day.
Yeah, oh, I hear you. I mean, this is a telling part for them to go on the road here and try to patch something together that we haven't seen out of them yet. Really, that we haven't seen since before the All-Star break last year. Alan, I will let you get back out to doing what you're doing, watching Oriole baseball here, and now you can stream the games. Who knew, right? I mean, that's the biggest news of all. It was such a big story that Greg Bader's name was uppercase and bold in the press release. That's true.
Let's go. Let's go.
All right. Alan McCallum has been our baseball guy all of his life. It feels that way. It's only been 30 some years. Maybe this is the 30th anniversary our summer, isn't it? Right? 95 was a year, right?
I met you in August of 1995.
All right. Well, we're going to have to go do something that doesn't include you eating cheese at
That's
some point in August, right?
life goes by very quickly, Nestor. A lot's changed in that time, for sure.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in our next segment. He is Alan McCallum. I am Nestor. We are putting this thing together. The Back to the Future scratch-offs from our friends at the Maryland Lottery will be available on this Wednesday at Cooper's Pub, Cooper's North. I keep saying Cooper's Pub. That's the one in Fells Point. Cooper's North. It's a pub, but it's north. It's in Mays Chapel. Timonium will be there on Wednesday afternoon. Then on the 30th, we'll be at Coco's Pub in Lauraville. I'm looking forward to the coconut shrimp as well as they're doing a crab melt. Throwback for me on the 30th of cocoa. So I want to give Marcellus some love on that. We're going to do the old Burke's crab melt cocoa style with some extra sharp cheddar cheese, which means that Alan won't eat it, but that's fine. On the 7th, we'll be out at Red Brick Station in White Marsh as well. It's the Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Curio Wellness and Liberty Pure Solutions. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. Heal the Orioles. Give me back my press pass. We're WNST.